United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Allen, and I'm joined by my colleagues, Judge Falvey and Judge Jaquith. We're convened today via video conference to hear arguments in the matter of Alan Kumpenberger against Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 20-4155. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please enter your appearances?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. This is Kenny Dohakis for appellant, Mr. Kumpenberger.
Good morning, Mr. Dohakis.
James Heiberg on behalf of the Secretary, Your Honor.
Good morning, Mr. Heiberg.
And Dustin Elias for the Secretary.
Good morning, Mr. Elias. Mr. Dohakis, I understand you want to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, we've made that happen, and you can proceed when you're ready, Mr. Dohakis.
Thank you, sir, and good morning. May it please the court. First, I want to thank this court again for the opportunity to present Mr. Kumpenberger's appeal. This appeal presents the court with an opportunity to finally determine the precise triggering event for agents and attorneys to charge and earn a fee. But more importantly, it also presents this court with an opportunity to clarify the purpose of a notice of disagreement, as well as the VA's obligations upon receipt of that notice. Before we begin, though, to understand why Mr. Kumpenberger is entitled to a fee, we have to understand the context of the veteran's 2010 claim. We must look at what the claimant was trying to do, what he sought from the VA, and what the VA did in response to his request for benefits. Mr. Valdez, the veteran, was injured in a motor vehicle accident in 1973 during his active service. This accident caused a head injury for which the VA assigned a single 10% rating for a scar. In 2010, after a regulation change on how they rate and compensate traumatic brain injuries, Mr. Kumpenberger assisted the veteran to file a new claim seeking an increased rating and explicitly asked for a total rating, which he labeled as TDIU. VA then awarded some additional benefits but for his TBI, but not a total rating. In response, Mr. Kumpenberger notified the VA that his client disagreed with the assigned rating and specifically reiterated his request for a total rating. We must keep in mind that under the updated rating schedule, Diagnostic Code 8045 directs VA to rate all separate physical dysfunction under an appropriate diagnostic code as residuals of a TBI. So when he sought a higher rating for his TBI, the VA was obligated to assign separate ratings for his headaches and any other physical dysfunction identified in the record. This means that the only determination made in the 2012 AOJ decision was the evaluation for the traumatic brain injury, which necessarily required them to rate each dysfunction separately. And that's important because in the notice of disagreement, Mr. Kumpenberger discussed the PTSD rating as part of the traumatic brain injury. So even though the VA assigned separate ratings for other disabilities like the headaches and neglected to for the PTSD, the only claim before the AOJ was for a higher rating for the traumatic brain injury, and the only determination made was to rate the traumatic brain injury. Turning now to the issue, there are two statutes in play here, 5904C and 7105. The first tells us how and when an agent can earn and charge a fee. It states, in connection with a proceeding before the VA with respect to benefits, a fee may not be charged, allowed, or paid for services provided before the date on which a notice of disagreement is filed with respect to the case. The plain meaning of this statute requires only that a claimant file a notice of his disagreement with respect to the case before an agent may earn a fee. Any reading of this statute that requires more than the filing of a notice of disagreement is not supported by the plain words used by Congress. The only way to affirm the board's decision is to read into 5904C the word valid before notice of disagreement. Congress did not authorize or otherwise require VA or this court to inquire into the validity of a notice of disagreement. The filing of the notice is the triggering event. It is not an invitation for VA to scrutinize whether the notice of disagreement was valid was valid. And such an inquiry is neither necessary nor required because the validity is of no moment. VA has asserted the issue of the validity for the notice for only one purpose, and that is to deny Mr. Gumpenberger his fee. This is beyond the authority of VA because it is beyond the scope of the statute. Under the correct interpretation, VA's inquiry is limited to only whether there was or there was not a notice of disagreement filed. The Secretary misinterprets Section 5904C1 by reading into the text a predicate validity of the notice of disagreement, as was done here by the board. But what does it mean to file a notice of disagreement, and how do we know if it is with respect to the case as required under 5904C? And the answer to this question lies in 7105. This statute says the...
Good morning, Mr. DeHakis.
Yes.
Before you move on, I wanted to ask you about 5904C1. So that could be read as kind of setting a mile marker that the attorney is not entitled to work performed before that point, but is entitled to a fee for work performed after that point, the filing of a NOD. Am I reading that right? That's what the statute's saying?
Yes, Your Honor. That's how we understand the statute to say that any work performed prior to the filing of the notice of disagreement is not compensable to the agent.
So what work did Mr. Gumpenberger perform after the NOD?
Mr. Gumpenberger helped to guide the veteran through the appeals process. He reviewed the statement of the case when it was issued. He filed the substantive appeal to the board. And although not present in the record, there's a lot of work that's performed outside of the record where the agent will review records, consult with the client.
Right.
And that
work was aimed at getting a board decision for TDIU. Is that correct?
Not precisely, Your Honor. Again, I think as I started out, understanding precisely what claim was before the VA is key to understanding how the decision was or how the grant of benefits was with respect to the case for which the notice of disagreement was filed.
Right.
Mr. Valdez.
But the substantive appeal was directed at he should be receiving TDIU. It wasn't a challenge to the TBI rating of 70%. It was directed toward, and he should get TDIU.
That's how Mr. Gumpenberger framed it, Your Honor. I admit that. But again, the determination with which he disagreed was to assign a rating less than total. And whether you seek or the record supports a total rating on a scheduler basis or a TDIU rating because you're unable to work, they're the same thing. The benefit sought, the claim filed was a request for a higher rating. And when, as the case law in our briefing explains, when a veteran files a claim and asks for the highest possible rating, it includes any aspect of or any avenue for achieving that rating, whether it's a scheduler or not.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. And that's an important question because that's really what the board and the secretary is focusing on, that he used the words TDIU as opposed to requesting a higher scheduler rating. But the 7105.
Mr. DeHakis, but that's not entirely right. So he didn't. Mr. Gumpenberger, who's obviously experienced in this at the agency, didn't just say what you just said. He said, I specifically, the veteran specifically disagrees with two things: the rating for PTSD, a scheduler rating, and TDIU. And then later he withdraws PTSD and only proceeds for TDIU. But yet the reframing now is, but all of that was only about getting to 100%. And so your answer would, it seems to me, be exactly the same. If he used any combination of those things, you'd be saying, but it doesn't matter because they all mean exactly the same thing.
Yes, Your Honor. Because again,
how would VA know that?
So
your answer is, if he says I'm appealing only TDIU, that would also encompass the PTSD rating, right?
It certainly could, Your Honor.
Well, not could. Under your theory, if he had just said, I'm appealing TDIU, that would have then encompassed the PTSD rating, which was at 70, right? And it was at X and he wanted higher. And that would have been exactly the same, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but to be precise, the VA did not award a separate rating for his PTSD, and that was his initial assertion that he wanted a separate rating, and they had included it within the 70% rating for the TBI.
But the point is that under your theory, he doesn't have to say anything other than the words TDIU to get everything else that was decided in the initial rating decision. Is that right? To get a hook for attorney's fees or agent fees into that. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And the reason for that is as I, again, to go back, the determination made was the assigned rating for his TDI. And the regulation directs to award separate ratings for different diagnosed and separable distinct disabilities. All he had to say was, I disagree with the assigned rating. And if he had said that, then I don't think there's any doubt. Well, I won't say that. I think it's much more clear that if he had said, you gave me too low of a rating, then he would have been entitled to a fee in that case.
Mr. Dehakis, I agree with you, right? Because the system is set up in a way that if you generally disagreed, or as you said, I disagree with my rating, we have a very different case. But here, Mr. Gumpenberger was very specific, because the story that now exists is, even though my notice of disagreement referred to PTSD and TDIU, it actually was about TBI, something that I never mentioned when I say I'm disagreeing with these two specific things. I'm just really having trouble factually getting over that point.
And I think, Your Honor, to assist you with that, number one, again, the determination is what he's disagreeing with. The statute says a notice of disagreement will be filed against a determination given by the VA. The notice of disagreement, whatever is in there, should be sympathetically read to understand which determination or which decision the veteran disagrees with.
But doesn't, then, you know, the same statute that we're talking about, 7105, we're talking about the part of that having to do with notice of disagreement. But of course, the notice of disagreement triggers an action by the agency, as you know. And that's discussed in D, section D of 7105.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you notice that what it says is basically D1 says, if you filed this notice of disagreement, then section A, so D1A, says that the statement of the case has to be a summary of the evidence in the case pertinent to the issue or issues with which disagreement has been expressed. So it may be that C, subsection C, about the notice of disagreement is silent, about whether or not there has to be a specificity of the issue or issues. But it seems like Congress in the very next paragraph says, hey, agency of original jurisdiction, if you get one of these notices of disagreement, you prepare the statement of the case, but focus on the issue or issues with which disagreement has been expressed. And here that was PTSD and TDIU, right?
I think, Your Honor, that we need to also look at D1, where and also the VA's own regulation 20.201, where they talk about, and I'm sorry, B1, 7105B1, where the quality or the requirements for a notice of disagreement is that it must be in writing. And it talks specifically about the determination with which disagreement is expressed. And the determination in our reading of this statute and regulations and case law is what drives the rest of 7105, where the agency will take such development or review action in response to the notice. Because one thing we need to really keep in mind is that the NOD is not an appeal. It's not a thing. The NOD is not a thing by itself. The NOD is a notice of a claimant's disagreement with a determination. And I think by looking at it that way, it becomes much clearer on how the notice of disagreement combined with the mandatory development and review action, which is informed by the regulations 3.103A, 5107A, 7104A, and
Hawkins, excuse me, but
yes, Your Honor.
Whatever he could have done under the rules, as Judges Allen and Falvey have pointed out, what he did do was very specific. It was, you know, we take exception to the following issues, the individual unemployability and the psychiatric condition. And that was responsive to a rating decision that described 9 disabilities plus SMC. Not one of those things was mentioned in his notice of disagreement. So how can that specific NOD be read as encompassing any or all of those 9, including TBI? And what's the basis for singling out TBI as encompassed by the NOD besides reverse engineering based on VA's later rate increase?
Again, Your Honor, the determination, the claim filed was for a higher rating. And simply because the regulation requires VA to separately rate TBI, it does not change the fact that that he asked for a higher rating. The VA adjudicated the appropriate rating for his TBI, which in this case included separate disability ratings for separately diagnosed conditions and disabilities, does not change the fact that the only claim presented and the only claim decided was the appropriate rating for his traumatic brain injury. And so when the veteran expresses a disagreement with the decision on rating his disability, then it necessarily encompasses any facet of that disability rating, which includes TDIU, a scheduler rating for the TBI, and even one of the scheduler ratings for headaches or scars or whatever else was awarded benefits for. And this is not the case where there was some unrelated benefit that was awarded. This is the case where he asked for a higher rating and VA issued a decision that only adjudicated the appropriate rating for his TBI. So to understand why that notice of disagreement includes the appropriate rating, scheduler rating for the TBI, requires you to understand, again, what issue was determined, what was the determination, and it was only the appropriate rating for the traumatic brain injury, nothing else. And so
wasn't the decision to focus on TDIU going forward a tactical one? I've taken TBI and the combination of disabilities, the 70 and 90% ratings, as far as I can reasonably expect to go. And the way to get to a total rating is by pressing forward for TDIU.
At that time, perhaps, I think, Your Honor, that's probably an accurate statement. I can't speak for the mindset of the veteran or Mr. Gumpenberger nearly 10 years ago. But what I would proffer is two things. Number one is, if the new exam were already of record, I think that the case law is quite clear that when reviewing the record and under the mandate of 7105 D1 to take review, development and review action, and that evidence supported a higher scheduler rating, then the VA would have been required to assign that in response to the notice of disagreement. The only reason when the VA offered the new examination, still within the appeal period, because a final board decision had not been issued, 3156B, of course, informs us that that evidence is treated as if it was filed with the claim, and then that evidence is what generated the changed rating. And so, again, it's the assigned rating for the TBI is what was presented to the VA and adjudicated, and the veteran disagreed with that determination that he wanted a higher rating, whether scheduler or for TDIU. I think that we need to understand again how the VA is required to review notices of disagreement in determining in identifying which determination has been made and disagreed with. And the two cases that the secretary cited, Ledford and Jarvis, both really speak to that issue. And in particular,
before you go on, yes, Your Honor. So you've spent a lot of time this morning, and I appreciate the discussion, focusing essentially talking about this is as the notice of disagreement is not the real issue in a sense. It's really TBI that was at issue here. And so what we're talking about is TBI. To be honest, though, when I read your brief, certainly the first argument in your brief was actually about, this is a generic principle of law we're talking about. It wasn't. Later in the brief, you do talk about the fact that it's TBI asking for a total rating, et cetera. But your argument in your briefing was that simply filing a notice of disagreement, if there's a rating decision that assigns, you know, that decides five issues, and you file a notice of disagreement, it doesn't matter whether you only identify one. I had understood your argument in your briefing to be that because I've filed that identifies one, I have filed a notice of disagreement in a case, and therefore it triggers the right to fees for any of those claims. Is that still your position?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
So all of the discussion then about TBI that you're doing about how it's this special rating and all of this, that's just an example of what happened here. Your legal principle is there could be service connection for hemorrhoids, service connection for hearing loss, an increased rating for a knee disability. I file a notice of disagreement that says I disagree only with service connection for hemorrhoids. Your position is that if benefits are later granted for hearing loss, that notice of disagreement allows me to collect fees. Is that still the position?
It's a little complicated answer, Your Honor, because again, we're now no longer in legacy, we're in AMA, where fees.
In this case, if this wouldn't have been this, right? And what had happened was the person only disagrees with service connection for hemorrhoids. Later, VA says, we've been doing bad exams for hearing loss. Do you want another one? I take another one and I get a rating. Your position, as I understood your briefing, was the agent who filed a notice of disagreement that says, I only disagree with hemorrhoids, now can get a chunk of the hearing loss benefits because of that notice of disagreement about hemorrhoids. Is that still the position?
If it was in the same decision, notification letter, then I would say probably yes, Your Honor. And again, the reason is that the notice of disagreement is to the determination, and the review action done in response to that, whether it's immediate and in between that and the statement of the case or even later to the board, or if it's later down the road, can entitle an agent to a fee. But I would submit then that there's a fallback protection where anybody, including the VA, can challenge the reasonableness of that fee.
Well, but no, but hold on, right? How is it that articulation, you know, there is this argument about whether Mr. Gumpenberger can advance the pro-veteran canon. I think he can, not on his own behalf, but on how one interprets the law, right? But just leave that aside, just assume he can. How is the position you've just taken, and Dawn, you can add 5 minutes, how is the position that you've just taken pro-veteran, that a lawyer can file a notice of disagreement that says, I only am challenging one thing, does no work on the other benefit, VA independently awards money, but we're going to interpret the statute to say that the veteran then loses 20% of that because a lawyer disagreed with a separate determination?
The pro-veteran canon, Your Honor, is not to be applied to 5904C, rather to the notice of disagreement provision. And as we explained in our briefing, in particular our reply brief, the pro-veteran reading of that statute requires the VA to take all development and review action that's required and appropriate, which may include a new examination for hearing loss, which may include, in this case, a new examination for traumatic brain injury, which may include an award of any number of additional benefits that, again, 3155B2 or D2 describes as these ancillary benefits. And so it's really, as we explained in our brief, yes, the triggering event is the notice of disagreement, but it's informed by the development and review action done, and it's informed in large degree by the development and review action done in response to the notice of disagreement under 7105D. And so if there were no entitlement or there was no basis for granting additional benefits,
but
there
Mr.
would
DeHakis,
be no benefits
the,
at all.
The development and review provisions of 7105 contemplate that that's going to occur before the statement of the case is done. That's not what happened here, at least the connection to the TBI increase and the additional examination.
No,
how can it possibly be? I mean, isn't the example that Judge Allen gave for you as nonsensical as it sounds, that you file a hemorrhoids claim and get connected for hearing loss and it's all covered? Isn't your only path, the principle has to be limited to, if it applies at all, that it has to be an NOD as to a something like TDIU that encompasses perhaps, arguably, other conditions, disabling conditions, not completely unrelated hemorrhoids and hearing loss?
I think, Your Honor, again, the notice of disagreement with respect to the case is the key terms that we have to focus on. And with respect to the case is informed, again, by the development and review action. So in a vacuum, yes, the answer to Judge Allen's question is yes. But the specific facts of the case will determine whether the notice of disagreement was with respect to the case, which eventually was awarded benefits. And so, if they were on the same determination, the same notification letter adjudicated both, and the veteran submitted a notice of his disagreement, then the case, so to speak, under 5904C is informed again under the development and review action performed in response to that.
And Mr. DeHakis, your position is not affected by the fact that here the new exam wasn't triggered by development of Mr. Gumperger's client's case, but rather, as I understand it, was more of a programmatic review of all TBI cases that he benefited from.
No, Your Honor.
No,
it does not matter because, again, under 7105, they're required to take development review action as required. One of the
policies, as required based on the determinations with which the veteran takes issue with in their notice of disagreement.
No, Your Honor, under the provisions of regulations, not inconsistent with this title. And again, one regulation is 3.103A, which requires the VA to maximize benefits and develop claims fully before making a final decision on them. And when this policy was instituted, that was it was a mandatory examination now because the regulations say so. And so even though they later created a new policy, 3.103A is the mandatory regulation, which then requires them to perform this examination in conjunction with this claim and this notice of disagreement.
I think Judge Jakewith has a question, but Don, could we get five minutes, please, Max?
Well, I wanted to follow up on the example, I guess, the hemorrhoids hearing loss one, and ask you how that connectivity that you posit survives the December 2015 further narrowing of the disagreement, as if the agent reemphasized, no, I really mean only hemorrhoids. I'm letting hearing loss go. How does that logic survive, or how does that not emphasize that the veteran's TBI rating was not being challenged?
It's, Your Honor, it's a little more complicated in the separate disabilities context because in the hemorrhoids and hearing loss situation where he specifically says, I no longer disagree with your determination on the hearing loss, that may be interpreted as a withdrawal of of his notice of disagreement. In this case, he never withdrew the disagreement with the assigned rating for the traumatic brain injury. From the very beginning, he asserted, I want a total rating. And in his notice of disagreement, he says, you didn't give me a total rating. And whether he labels it as a TDIU or he says, I want it for a total rating under PTSD or headaches or traumatic brain injury under the facets is irrelevant
But he never withdrew it because he never disagreed with the 70% rating. There was nothing to withdraw.
Although, Your Honor, he didn't specifically mention the 70% rating under the facets under Diagnostic Code 8045, again, he disagreed with the only decision made, which was how are we, the VA, supposed to rate or should we rate, based on the evidence, your traumatic brain injury and all of its residuals. That's the determination made, and that's the determination with which he disagreed. And I admit that when there's separate hearing loss, hemorrhoids, whatever, it gets much more complicated. But fortunately, we don't have that situation here. Here again, we have one determination and one claim. And at least in the facts here and applying the plain meaning of 5904C, a notice of disagreement with respect to the case, which again was the determination made. And I would just go back to the secretary's regulation.
But that's not right, is it, Mr. DeHakis? The RO did not just determine TBI or even just TBI and secondary and other related disabilities. They all denied TDIU.
They did say, Your Honor, that you were not unable to work. But again, as we talked about in our briefs, a TDIU is a total rating. The Congress did not authorize or talk about a TDIU rating. They said that when you are totally disabled, which 1155 and 1110 describe the level of disability as an impairment in their ability to work, that means that you are totally unable to work. And so even again, by labeling it a TDIU does not defeat the fact that he was only disagreeing with the only decision made by the VA in this case, which was the proper rating for his TBI. And the TDIU, as we know under Rice, is simply a means to get a total rating. It's not its own thing. It's just another way to get the appropriate rating. And the appropriate rating is what Mr. Gumpenberger or Mr. Valdez through Mr. Gumpenberger disagreed with.
Why don't you wrap up, Mr. DeHakis?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I just want to emphasize again that it's the determination going back to, well, I'll save that for my reply. Again, it's a determination that's informed by the development and review action, which determines the case with which the notice of disagreement is filed.
Thank you. Mr. Heiberg?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. The court should affirm the board's July 17, 2019 decision because appellant was not entitled to a fee in the absence of a valid NOD filed as to the 70% TBI rating assigned by the April 2013 rating decision. Section 20.201, the regulation then in effect, required that where an AOJ made determinations on several issues at the same time, that the NOD must identify specific determinations with which claimant disagreed, which was also reflected by the Federal Circuit's holding in Ledford in 1998. Here, the agent appellant's June 2014 NOD on behalf of the veteran identified only the denial of TDIU and service connection for an acquired psychiatric disorder as the issues in question. And those were the only two issues addressed by the August 2014 statement of the case. And perhaps most critically, the October 2014 VA Form 9 failed to appeal the TBI rating, failed to address the TBI issue at all. Appellant argues that Section 20.201 was...
Backing up for a second, what's the basis for grafting the NOD measures in 7105 and 20.201, such as they were in June of 2013, on to 5904? Those aren't fee provisions, are they?
Well, Your Honor, they at least go to what requires a valid NOD to be. And 5904 goes to the eligibility for attorney's fees, but it requires the filing of NOD, and the NOD and what constitutes an NOD is going to be defined by both that statute and the regulation in existence at the time. And here, there was never any objection raised as to the rating assigned for TBI.
But wasn't the NOD here submitted with respect to the case?
Well, once the adjudications had been made regarding the separate rating or the service connection for TBI and the rating assigned 70%, but there is also a separate denial of TDIU, those have now been separately adjudicated. And under the regulation, and certainly as reflected by Ledford, they both must be identified if that's going to be an issue going forward. So the objection is to just TDIU as opposed to TBI may reflect a conscious strategy on the behalf of the agent appellant on behalf of the veteran. The requirements for TDIU and 100% scheduler rating for TBI are not 100% overlapping. There is a certain difference as to the requirements. And as such, since they do not completely overlap, once they have been separately adjudicated, if the appellant on behalf of the veteran wishes to pursue both, they both must be identified in the NOD to go forward.
But there are other aspects of the process that are set in motion by an NOD that require VA to address a disability, aren't there? Like disabilities reasonably raised by the evidence?
Well, Your Honor, in this circumstance, TDIU was expressly raised. As to the further development, there was no additional...
What about TBI?
Well, TBI, since it was not objected to, was not encompassed within the scope of the NOD. It was not addressed in the statement of the case. There was no objection ever raised with regards to the issues raised in the statement of the case, and the subsequent appeal didn't reference the TBI rating.
But it was referenced in the statement of the case. The statement of the case discussed all the disabilities, not just the TDIU.
But Your Honor, there was no objection raised as with regards to the TBI rating, and it was certainly not addressed in the substantive appeal.
Well, what about the checking on the form of the big all capital letters, I want to appeal all of the issues listed in the statement of the case? What does that mean?
Well,
doesn't that sufficiently signal that the veteran was pursuing a total disability rating as the appellant has characterized it?
Well, Your Honor, that was certainly not identified in the NOD specifically and not raised in the substantive appeal. And under the circumstances, the court is going to look at the context in which the NOD and the surrounding communications in writing were within the context there. And relying on Jarvis for that, the contextual analysis in that case looked at the language of the substantive appeal. And there, as here, it was silent as to the issue in question, which in this case, of course, is the TBI rating. So it is our position that the TBI rating was never effectively raised by appellant on behalf of the veteran. And certainly with regards to the specific areas of a disagreement to be identified in the NOD, certainly the current statute 7105D permits the board to dismiss any appeal which fails to identify specific determinations with which the claimant disagrees, and also the language of the current implementing regulation 20.202A as well, which effectively repeats the language of prior 20.201. So there is consistency.
But neither of those said that at the time, right?
No, Your Honor. And it was a two-step process at that point. And appellant's argument, as I understand it, is essentially all I had to do was file the NOD, which to the extent that we follow that argument, at some point, he, under the old legacy system, would have had to identify the specific determinations at issue within the substantive appeal, which was not done. So he was neither identified in the NOD at the time or in the substantive appeal. So it was not raised. And certainly nowhere.
Is it the secretary's position that an agent who is instrumental in submitting a timely, facially valid NOD that instigates further review, an appeal, and board action cannot receive fees because the favorable outcome flows from a disability reasonably raised by the evidence?
Well, Your Honor, certainly with regards to any objection raised by an NOD, if the NOD does not address a specific denial, then no, the attorney would not be entitled to it. And certainly, as the court held in Percivale, when there's no valid NOD filed as to a particular determination, appellant is not entitled to a fee. And certainly, if the 5904, as referenced previously, if is not applicable if no valid NOD has been filed with regards to the requirements of then 7105 and the 20.201 in effect at the time. The other argument that appellant raises is that effectively the NOD as to TDIU is the same as an NOD as to the total rating for TBI. But as stated, the requirements for each are not 100% overlapping. And certainly once the issues were separately adjudicated by the 2013 rating decision, it was incumbent on appellant on behalf of the veteran at that time to raise the issue in the NOD. Certainly 4.124A and the Diagnostic Code 8045 list specific symptoms that are required to reach a 100% scheduler rating. but it does not specifically address unemployability, which is the criteria for TDIU. And certainly the September 2016 rating decision, which granted the 100% rating for TBI, did not reference employability as a basis for that award. So as also referenced, TBI is essentially another way to get to 100% rating, but it is theoretically easier to obtain and is based on individual circumstances as opposed to average impairment. And as referenced previously, the choice to pursue TDIU as opposed to a 100% scheduler rating may very well have been a conscious decision on behalf of appellant, figuring it might have been an easier way to obtain the total rating. But again, because the requirements do not specifically overlap, they are not synonymous, and the board did not err in determining that no NOD had been filed regarding the TBI rating.
But VA connected them, didn't they? According to VA, the veteran's 100% disability rating for TBI was based on his severe functional impairment of memory, attention, concentration, plus moderately severe impaired judgment, inappropriate social interaction most or all of the time. He was often disoriented and gets lost even in familiar surroundings. He has three or more symptoms that interfere with work, and one or more neurobehavioral effects that interfere with or preclude workplace interaction, and he's unable to communicate at least half the time. Doesn't the RO's description of the veteran's functional impairment as a result of his TBI relate to unemployability?
Well, ultimately it would. Once you receive that 100% rating, yes, you are effectively unemployable. But at the time of the April 2013 rating decision, it was assigned at 70% and TDIU was denied. So at that point, appellant on behalf of the veteran, if both issues were to be contested, had to be identified in the NOD. That VA subsequently adjudicated the TBI rating at 100% was an intervening independent action that was not the due to the actions of appellant on behalf of his client.
What's the significance of the board's linking the two up in the sense that the award of the 100% evaluation for TBI is effective the date of the claim for TDIU?
Well, I believe that was the first identifiable date in which the claim was filed. And certainly at the time, it was for increased residuals of the TBI, which effectively related to the scars, and that was subsequently increased in, I believe, a September 2012 rating decision. And then, of course, the TDIU was raised at that time. But that is the earliest date at which there was a claim filed. But our position is, again, that once the issues were separately adjudicated, they had to be separately identified in the NOD. And so that the board's assignment of the effective date is not truly relevant to the outcome of this issue here.
What's the impact of the misstatement by VA in its March 2017 letter to the appellant that they had received a letter from his representative, actually from him, in January 2016, and then VA asserts specifically withdrawing the issue of TBI from the appeal? In truth, that didn't happen, right? The withdrawal was of the psychiatric impairment, not the TBI. Isn't that right?
That is correct. It was withdrawn at the time. I, Your Honor, I would not believe there's any substantive impact by that, any misstatement there. Again, the crux of the issue is identifying the disagreement in the April 2013 rating decision, which was not done as to the TBI rating.
What about the board garbled some things too, referring to TDIU when they meant TBI, and calling the September 2016 rating decision that awarded the 100% TBI rating a 70% TBI rating.
Again, Your Honor, I do not believe
they were kind of confused about the relationship with between these two things as well.
Well, Your Honor, I think that that's simply a Scribner's error. Certainly with regards to the misstatement as to the rating assigned when it should have referenced 100%. But again, there was no NOD specifically addressing the rating for the TDI. And because the requirements for TDIU and 100% scheduler rating for TBI are not 100% overlapping, they had to have been separately identified. One is not the equal of the other. If there are no further questions, in conclusion, we request the court confirm the board's
actually,
decision.
Actually, Mr. Heiberg, I do have one question. It's just a factual question. I take it Mr. Valdez has been paid everything in back benefits that he was awarded, right? In other words, you're not with you, meaning VA, isn't withholding a 20% amount now pending this matter, given the board's decision. Is that right?
Your Honor, I do not have an exact answer to that, although I have no reason to suspect that it has based on the board's decision here.
And so were we to rule in Mr. Gumpenberger's favor, then the agency would have to make some sort of determination about whether under the secretary's equitable authority to seek to get this money back from Mr. Valdez. Is that right?
Conceivably, but I do not know the answer to that. Although, I mean, I do not believe Mr. Valdez was offered the opportunity to intervene. I do not believe he availed himself of that.
Yes, I just, you know, in cases like this, it's never quite clear to me whether the person actually thinks that something that I was paid several years ago, the person who represented me is now going to get it, and now I have to pay back. And so I just wanted to understand the facts. This is not critical of VA at all in any respect. I just wanted to understand whether, in fact, that is on the table, that a decision will lead to VA paying twice for something it should only pay once for. And then VA has to make a choice if that's the factual scenario, that in fact, do you seek recruitment from Mr. Valdez or not?
Yes, Your Honor. I do not have a definitive answer for you on that question. It is conceivable, but I do not have the answer.
All right. Thank you.
And again, if there are no further questions, we request the court affirm the board's decision for the reasons stated.
Thank you, Mr. Heiberg. Mr. Dahakis, we'll restore your 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to start by, again, asserting, clarifying something that the secretary said, how Mr. Valdez had filed a new claim for service connection for TBI. He, in fact, had already requested benefits in the 70s for this. At the time, the rating schedule was a bit more difficult than getting an assigned rating. So he was actually requesting an increase. And again, that is an important fact in this case, because the claim filed was for a higher rating. The decision rendered was for the appropriate rating, and the disagreement was with that assigned rating. I want to also touch on the pro-veteran canon and explain just briefly how a pro-veteran reading of 7105 and 20.201 really touches on what Judge Jaquith was talking about with the reasonably raised issues. Again, the development and review action mandated by 7105 necessarily requires the VA to adjudicate anything that's reasonably raised in response to the disagreement. And the regulations inform them of what they're supposed to be looking for. 5107A, all lay and medical evidence. 7104A, the entire record. And 3.103A will fully develop a claim to its maximum to grant every benefit supported in law. And under the new, more recent 3.155D2, which was in effect in 2015, to award any ancillary benefit. And so for in a situation where a notice of disagreement is filed and the record reasonably raises entitlement to another benefit, this is what a similar situation to what we have here, where the review and development action, whether it's triggered or initiated by a policy change or it's triggered by evidence that's already of record or even new evidence that's received As we know under 3156B and bond, they're required to determine whether it's new material with the original claim under review. All of those informs how the VA is supposed to adjudicate and process the claim before them from the veteran. And by taking a pro-veteran stance and requiring the statutes and the regulations governing notices of disagreement to require VA to do all of this, it is the most beneficial to veterans. Now, the agents and attorneys obviously will benefit from this. And again, I want to just briefly touch on the fact that everyone in the process has the option to challenge the reasonableness. So if nothing was done and, you know, out of thin air, essentially, an award is granted, I would say that that's probably unreasonable to get a fee for work that wasn't done. But again, the statute says any fee less than 20 is presumed reasonable. Going back to the secretary's discussion of
Mr. Dehakis, I want to go back to the first question I think that Judge Falvey asked. Can you point to anything in the record about anything that Mr. Gumpenberger actually did with respect to securing the new TBI exam? Because as I understand it, the TBI re-exam option was really agency-wide dealing with a systemic problem that the agency had identified. And the reason I'm asking this is actually quite practical. It may not make a legal difference, but the reality is that I'm pretty confident that VA has paid Mr. Valdez. And so your client's position is you're going to go and take the money from him. And if he really didn't do anything, so if you could help me at least factually assuage the idea that Mr. Gumpenberger did absolutely nothing in connection with the TBI exam, that would be helpful. If you can't, that's okay. But and as I say, it may not make a legal difference, but that's how I see the factual issue here.
At this time, Your Honor, I can't, because as you mentioned, this is a legal issue, and what work he performed in from the legal perspective is irrelevant. The statute presumes that his efforts were reasonable and the fee is reasonable to award him for what he did in getting the higher rating. I didn't go, and I'm saying that because I didn't necessarily go through the record to look for that specific question.
But your logic would be, and you can finish answering my question, but your logic would be the same if it didn't, as we said before, that the hemorrhoids hearing loss. I know you keep saying that's more difficult, but the reason it's more difficult is because the outcome is just so clearly bizarre, right, that one can't be behind the cover of both dealing with ratings. Hearing loss, hemorrhoids, your legal position would be exactly the same, right? That I file a disagreement for hemorrhoids, I do as the agent nothing about hearing loss, VA does a system-wide reset that gives him a benefit. Your client gets a chunk of that because he helped him with hemorrhoids, even though he didn't do with hearing loss. That's got to be your position. Is that right?
That is my position, Your Honor. And I would respond to that again. That's what the statute says. And that's what the regulation says. Or rather, that's what the statute says, the fee statute, 5904C. The plain reading of the statute requires that result. That's why a ruling here is so important, because as was mentioned in your question, the VA does go after the veteran for this money, and having a statement of law that says this is what the statute requires will prevent this from happening in the future. We represent a lot of folks where the fee is overturned, a fee denial, and then the VA goes back after the veteran or the claimant for the money years later. And they rarely find any equity in or administrative error in adjudicating that overpayment and that debt. But again, that's the plain meaning of the statute. And I think it's much more clear when you look at the new AMA amendments, where a decision on an initial decision triggers entitlement to a fee. And so Congress has very clearly moved the trigger for earning a fee further and further back to where now it's an initial decision, MVA, as we mentioned in our notice, our Rule 30B notice that we filed yesterday, I think. That's what the Federal Circuit said. That is the triggering event. And so in that example today, if a determination is made on hearing loss and 5 years later, the veteran has been represented by an attorney and 5 years later, a new decision is given that awards additional benefits, that's under MVA, that attorney is entitled to a fee. That's what Congress said in their statutes, and that's our argument.
They're entitled to a fee, but they're entitled to a fee for efforts. The statute is clear. It includes the words for efforts. It's not just that they're entitled to a fee because they signed a document. They have to have done something.
Yes, Your Honor. And certainly the attorney is free to, and I would submit that we often review these kinds of decisions and will not accept a fee. When there's a withholding agreement, the fee is presumed reasonable. And anybody can challenge that. The veteran, the attorney, the OGC can step in and look at the reasonableness of the fee and say, current case law allows them to look at, I think Skates is the controlling right now, that says we look at what you actually did to get the benefit. And if nothing was done, then there is a process for denying that fee, or at least challenging it and having it reviewed by both the board and this court.
Thank you, Mr. Dehakis. Thank you, Mr. Piper. Unless Judge Falvey or Judge Daquith have any other questions?
No further questions. Thank you. Thank you both.
I might try one more.
Absolutely.
The agent files the notice of appeal in October of 2014, and then in December of 2015, submits the letter further narrowing the scope of the veteran's appeal. And so how do you square the both the initial NOD and the narrowing efforts with the principle that with respect to the case encompasses all potential claims raised by the evidence? How do you square that principle with the agent's efforts here to narrow the focus of the appeal, apparently for tactical reasons?
Again, Your Honor, I think that in a different factual context, that may be an important factor. However, in this context, there was only one claim filed. There was only one determination made. And although that determination, because of the regulation on how to rate TBI, included what looks like different determinations, it's not. It's a single determination. This is the disability that is compensable. This is the severity of those of your traumatic brain injury residuals, and so by excluding part of
but the one determination is 70%, 90% SMC, no TDIU, and no psychiatric condition. And so the agent on behalf of the veteran goes after only TDIU and the psychiatric condition.
I would respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor. Again, I the way that I read 7105 and the obligation to maximize benefits, the determination was how to rate the TBI. And when he notified the VA that he disagreed with that determination, it brought in everything. And I think that it's, I will I will not add to that. I think it brings in all aspects of how to rate the TBI, to include separate ratings for the PTSD, to include any of the other lists that are included in 8845.
Can I stop you and jump in with Judge, because I want to make this clear. If we rule against you and you end up at the Federal Circuit, okay, I want to be clear that you're actually presenting to us what you'll then tell the Federal Circuit that we ignored or something, okay? So what you are saying now, if you had said this in the brief, maybe this would be different, right? But what you're saying now is, you know what? You don't have to deal with any of this meaning of what 7105 talks about and all of this, because this is not a case about notices of disagreement. This is a case about what TBI is. And so you, court, should address what TBI is. So in TBI, you might have a list of 10 things, but for TBI, it's all one. Therefore, it may look like 10 determinations, but it's really one. If that was your theory of the case, then all of this other stuff is things that we don't have to say anything about, right? But if what you were saying is that no, I want you, court, to rule as a matter of law on the meaning of 7105 as it relates to attorney's fees, then we're in the world of hemorrhoids and hearing loss, okay? And so which of those arguments are you advancing? Because I will tell you, I don't think you advanced the first argument in your briefing.
Well, Your Honor, first, obviously, the 5905 for interpretation is the primary argument. And I would push back that in our briefing, we did raise the concept that the issue presented, rather the claim presented to the VA, and the only claim adjudicated was for the proper rating for the TBI.
If you're right about that, right, you could win this case and be wrong about your broader principle, right? In other words, hearing loss and hemorrhoids are off the table because this looks like 10 determinations or 9 determinations, but it's really one, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Which
is your principal argument here?
The principal argument, Your Honor, is the 5904 interpretation that the triggering event is a notice of disagreement with respect to the case. But as we discussed in our brief, with respect to the case is informed by what is the determination. And as we also discussed in the brief, and I'm looking here to find an exact page number, but we did brief, particularly in our reply brief, that the determination was the appropriate rating for the traumatic brain injury. And that was the only determination made. There was no separate claims filed. There was no separate issues. The only request before the VA for benefits was for a higher rating for his traumatic brain injury, based in large part on which I can tell you the agent did recognize the change in regulations for how to rate TBI in 2010.
All right. Well, thanks again to the parties. We appreciate your argument this morning, and the case is submitted.
And the court is in recess.